welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. This is a continuation of our Relic Knights chat that hopefully was the previous episode, if I've got it right. So Conrad's still here.
That was the game I had down the Nag's Head, wasn't it?
No, we're not doing that again.
Oh, I tried.
I'm not sure that Des would be very happy at being described as a Nag's Head anyway.
Or the club.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had a game.
Right.
YouTube videos on the Relic Knights, on Relic Knights, and tried to pass that information on to me. And we basically had a small duel between two figures. And then we sort of looked at each other and said, well, should we just try and muddle through the game? And we had some guys who were sitting around and they'd finished their game. They sort of were looking through the rule book and everything. And essentially between the four of us, we muddled through the game, which obviously leaves you with questions on and gaps in knowledge. But hopefully if it's done its job, the hooks are there for you to go away and find out. If it's a rubbish game, you'll go, not interested.
And the figures will just go in a box.
Or on eBay.
What, before you tell everyone else it's rubbish?
Yep. Powerful thing.
Right, so hopefully you're not going to tell me it's rubbish, because I hate putting stuff on eBay. It always depresses me.
I was pleasantly surprised by it.
Excellent! Well, that's a good start. So, let's do some newbie questions, and then you can answer or go, I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
So first things first is, how do you pick your team, crew?
Cadres, they're called.
Cadres, okay.
There you go. How do you pick a cadre? There are points levels, game point levels, you know, very much like Malifaux, 35, 40, 50 Soulstone.
Right.
Or War Machine or whatever the game system is. And you both decide to play to a particular points level. And there you go. The cards have got points.
Right, so there's no restrictions beyond the points.
No, there are.
So you can pick what models you want?
I believe they are in faction, but I have not checked
that. Okay, yeah, but if you wanted to not take any of the minion types and just go with, you know, an all uniques crew, you could do that.
As far as I can see, the only restrictions at the various points levels are number of knights.
Right, and is there a difference between a relic knight and a questing knight?
No, they are both. A questing knight is a knight that has just become a relic knight. He's early on in his
Okay, so they're
career,
probably cheaper.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm guessing they probably will be. We can probably check by looking at two separate entries in the book. So, for instance, the Black Diamond Leopold is that many points, and Black Diamond and One Shot is a lot more points. So there you go. Yes, I'm guessing that is probably the case. Leopold's 13 points and One Shot is 18 points.
Okay.
So there's 1, 2, 3, 4 different size points battles that they're recommending. 35, 50, 70 and 100.
Okay, well, 100. Mm. That's a couple of Relic Knights.
Yeah, I mean, you get 1 to 2 Relic Knights restrictions from 70 to 100 points onwards.
Okay.
The other thing that changes in the game size is you have this dashboard that you play with.
Right, okay, that was going to be my next question. That in the game, I got a lovely piece of paper that had like squares for cards and stuff.
Yep.
What's that for?
It controls essentially the order of activations in your cadre.
Okay.
So there are specific, I mean, the things that you're are really interested in are the ready queue and the active slot and idle as well. So you've got this queuing, this concept of a queuing system. Whatever model you are activating will be in the active slot. Whatever models, when I say models, I include units as well. Whatever's going to come next will be next in the ready slot, and the one after that will be in the next ready slot afterwards, etc., etc. There is a maximum number of ready slots that you can use, dependent on the game size. So at 35, they recommend using two slots.
Okay, and the map has up to three, doesn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, at bigger games, they do say use four slots, and at 100 points, you can use five slots as well. So the mats don't have, the dashboards don't have that.
Right, okay.
But I'm sure you could just use the token pile area on the dashboard for your extra slots and just sort of move it along there.
Okay, so your opponent can see what model you're going to activate next.
Yeah, it's open. It's an open information game.
Right. So is it I activate a model, you activate a model, I activate a model, you activate a model?
Correct.
Okay.
There is no next turn.
So there's no, okay.
And that was interesting, because we were sort of going, all right, you know, very much like Malifaux, all right, when do we renew our hands and all this sort of stuff. And going away afterwards and reading the rules, you realise that there is no rounds or turns as such. It is a continuous game dependent on how you use that active and ready queue. Eventually, you know, stuff will die, so it will drop into.
Okay, okay, that sounds very interesting. So I've moved a model into the active slot.
Yep.
Okay, and there's a linked slot as well, isn't there? So I assume that some of the models have, because some of the models come with two cards, don't they? There are two models in a.
In the unit, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. So I mean,
generally, they are ciphers, as far as I can see.
Right, okay.
So ciphers are like your little totem things, but they're actually what gives the Relic Knights their power.
Oh, okay.
From the Dark Space Calamity, to try and avoid the Dark Space Calamity event. See, I've read some fluff and things, you know.
You've read some fluff. So I move my model into the active slot.
Yep.
I do something with it.
Yep.
Where does that model then go?
It goes into the idle pile.
Right, and does it go at the bottom? Or when you're replenishing the ready crew, can you choose any model that's in your idle section?
As far as I can see, that is correct, yes.
Oh, right. So you can cycle a particular model around relatively quickly.
Yeah, again, I mean, and again. Obviously in the smaller point games, you could be putting your relic or questing knights in there and the cipher as well, back into the queue. The restriction is that, you know, at 35 points, you've only got two slots in the ready queue.
Right. Okay, that's very interesting. So that's how you activate your models. Is it scenario, but are the scenarios you're playing to, or is it just shoot them, kill them?
Right, you've got this Esper deck.
Right, so that's the pack of cards that came with the...
Correct, yeah. I think it's 42 cards. But in that, you also get other useful cards.
Okay.
And I found this out the hard way. I was looking for some particular information, and apparently they came in the Esper deck, and I went back and looked, and it was there. But what you do before your game is, very much like Malifaux.
Right.
You flip some cards, and it determines primary and secondary scenarios for each player.
Okay, I'm trying to see if I've got an Esper deck handy. It appears that I do not have an Esper deck handy. They must all be over the other side of the room.
So the Esper deck has two symbols on it, generally.
Right.
One is a larger version of one of the, I don't know, life or creation symbols that they use, whatever they're called. And the other one's the small point. So the bigger ones are worth 2 points and the little one's worth 1 point of Esper. That's just a general game mechanic. But what you do is you look at the primary, and that is becomes right. The primary scenario for you, and you look at the secondary one, and that's the secondary one. Then you flip another card, and that is the primary and secondary for your opponent, or as they're called, the hero and villain.
Okay.
So you don't have a first and second player, you have a hero and villain player.
Okay, well, I'm obviously always going to be the hero.
No, that's flipped.
I'm obviously always going to be the hero.
What you do is you flip three cards, and each player adds up the total number of Esper that matches their cadre's affinity. So each cadre has a particular colour stroke symbol that they
affinity to. So I'm green.
I'm purple.
For Cersei.
I'm purple and... And for Cersei, I'll be green as well.
Right, okay. So that determines who the hero and the villain is?
Yeah. The player with the highest total has the choice to be the hero or the villain.
Okay, and you're playing towards a victory points total?
Correct, yeah. Yep.
Right, okay. And
so the game the game carries on, because at the end of each... when you've completely activated, at the cleanup phase, during the cleanup phase... You check for
victory
conditions. Yeah.
Okay. So that sounds pretty interesting. So no turns, continual flow to the game.
Yep. Crazy stuff.
What abilities and things?
Crazy stuff. Yeah. Real. You know, deployment. Conventionally, we're used to deploying. In a deployment zone, aren't we?
Yep.
You don't do that in Relic Knights. You put your objectives out, your primary and secondary objectives out. So the games revolve around these primary and secondary objectives.
Okay.
Dependent on who the hero and villain is, you put one figure down. It mustn't be within 9 inches of an enemy model or 9 inches of an enemy objective. Then your opponent puts one down with the same constraints.
Ah, so similar to the blind deployment from Malifaux's story encounters.
Yep, but essentially that means you can deploy anywhere on the board.
That's interesting because Fistful of Kung Fu, the game that Spoons and I play,
mm-hmm.
Uses that deployment mechanism.
Okay.
You know, you can go all over the board. It's not you're here and they're there sort of thing. That's very cool. So how does the game actually play? You activate a unit and then it can do stuff. How do I shoot one of your models?
Right. So everything's got your cards have got your general stat card, and then each unit has another card which has information on the stuff that they can do, the special stuff sort of thing. There's no concept of ranges in the game because it's so far in the future that it's considered that anything can shoot anywhere.
Right.
There is a concept of hand-to-hand. You have to be touching another opponent's base to be doing hand-to-hand. But for shooting, you just need line of sight. There's no range measurement as such.
Right, so does that... So my next question is then, does that automatically imply that you want a very heavily covered board a la Infinity? Because Infinity has that sort of shooting type thing.
Well, they recommend 2 to 3 pieces of terrain for each square foot of playable space on your tabletop, with at least half of it blocking line of sight to size 2 and 3 units. So there's a concept of size.
All right, so
as well.
So yes, that is quite a lot of terrain then.
Yep.
Hmm.
And there's you can have crazy stuff like portals, where you go through a portal and it comes out somewhere else on the board.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, you know it.
Oh, that sounds cool. Oh.
B- Bendy boards need to make some of those, I think.
Oh, I think they do. Oh, I've got a design floating in my head already.
So
nice.
So what you do, you have an activation phase, you have an initial movement, you do one action, then you have a concept of a follow-up movement, and then there's a clean-up phase. If you don't want to do anything, any of the actions and movements and things, you can do something called refocus, where you forfeit your move, action and follow-up move to draw 5 cards from the Esper deck, and the active unit gains 1 held Esper. So Esper is the thing that makes everything happen in the game. And Esper
Right, so it's a finite resource?
It's a finite resource in that there are limitations. Held Esper, there are limitations on each unit's card as to how many Esper that unit can hold. Some can't hold any. The resource is obviously managed by what cards you have in your hand. But it is finite as such, in that once the decks cycle through, you reshuffle and put it back up for ready for use again as well.
Okay, and what happens when the Esper deck runs out of cards?
You just reshuffle it.
It and put it back.
Yep.
So basically it is just a continual play thing until you reach the victory points in the cleanup phase.
Correct, yep. That's right.
Awesome. That does sound pretty cool.
But, you know, it seems to be quite a simple thing, but we were sort of, when we were playing, we were throwing out damage at various figures, and my questing knight died, and we were trying to work out that that can't be all that they can do, you know, just take the damage and that's it. It seemed to be fairly quick. But each of these, there's a lot of keywords and abilities, traits, whatever they're called, on your cards. You need to go away and look at those, because they do some crazy things. A lot of the questing knights and relic knights themselves have got inbuilt initiate and master abilities, which allow damage to be revoked or pushed onto another unit or even healed. So you have this huge sort of, you've got this idea of stuff being thrown all over the place, people doing all this sort of, all sorts of crazy stuff. And it seems, I've got this vision of it being quite a quick, fast-paced game as you're playing it.
Okay. It does sound, the more you talk about it, the more appealing it sounds.
I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it enough to go away and read through the rule book, and I'm excited about trying to get another game in, because I know a little bit more about the game itself, and just to try it out, just to try stuff out, you know, in terms of, because we didn't actually play a scenario as such.
Right.
Because the scenarios, you know, you've got anything from sort of blowing up stuff to trying to collect stuff and bring it back to your primary objective, all sorts of things like that. And then there are two special cards in there, the Void and something else. Can't remember what the multi-symbol one is called. But they add another set of scenario conditions in there as well. But it seemed like a lot of fun.
Okay.
And completely different to anything that we've played before. When you buy your cadre, you can buy things called boost packs.
Right. Okay. I was going to ask, because I've got a pack. I've got a box that says boost tokens on it.
And they do stuff like medikits. Can't think of any other stuff, but you know, like boosts in a computer game.
Yeah.
They have that kind of feel and idea about it.
So power-ups.
Brilliant, yeah. Absolutely brilliant way of describing it. Power-ups of some way, some sort.
Okay.
And they come with a points value. So you can build them into your force. There are restrictions on how many you can have. But again, all of a sudden you've got something that can change the way things work, you know?
Okay. Oh, I'm quite excited now.
Well, there you go. I hope you are.
I know you've inspired me to actually go and play a game, I think.
There's some interesting concepts in there. The units, for instance, they have to have a cohesion, 3-inch cohesion. But when you throw damage at a unit, you have a primary target, and then you have this concept of a danger zone, so which is 6 inches. So
does that mean you can sing?
Yeah, possibly.
I flew in the danger zone.
I knew that was going there. But essentially,
you can't go wrong with a bit of Kenny Loggins.
You push out damage to figures within a certain range. Because if you look at a unit card looks as though it's just one mass of health, but it's actually lots of little bits of health. But it's just an interesting. There's some interesting concepts and game mechanics in there, which makes it
cool.
Which makes
so. Here's another question for you. Most of the cards I've seen or models that you've seen, you have the unit card and then you have an ability card as well.
Yep.
If I was to say, are you writing stuff on cards? Is it a dry erase marker for damage and stuff?
Yes, one of the cards has got a health track on it.
Okay. And B, could you back-to-back those cards in a single sleeve so that, you know, you're not having two cards that you just flip it over to look at the back? Does that work?
Yes, it will work. The obvious risk there is rubbing off the health track.
Yeah, but you deal with that with Malifaux all the time. Yeah.
The only problem is that they, for the Relic Knight models, they have the bigger card size.
Yes. So how do you deal with that on the ready track?
On the
is there a smaller card as well?
Yeah, basically the dashboard is meant to hold the unit card, which has got the stats on it for melee movement, psychic attack and ranged attack and things like that.
All the abilities are on the back of the other one. Right.
Yep.
Okay. Right, because I was looking at them thinking about sleeving them yesterday and about whether I could go back to back or whether that worked.
The back to back's actually a good idea. I didn't think of doing that. I've done what you've done. I've got coloured sleeves with clear one side.
Yeah, but it was as I was playing with them yesterday and putting them over to be undercoated, I was thinking, I wonder if you can just back them. And I didn't know whether there was a game reason why it's two cards or whether it's just a production thing to have two cards.
No, I mean, they could have done it, I suppose, because the back of the cards just says Relic Knights, doesn't it?
Yeah, it has, or it has the faction blurb on it.
And they have, I mean, on the Esper cards where they've got stuff on two sides, so.
Right, okay.
I really don't know why.
All right, maybe just a production decision.
Yep, probably.
Okay, cool. That's interesting. I think it's interesting that, minions come. My minions certainly come in different sizes. So I got my pacers are in units of one, whereas my jet bike girls are in units of three. And so it'll be interesting to see how that works with shooting. And so if you have a unit of more than one model, do they all shoot at the same target and things, or are they effectively individuals?
One of them is nominated as the firer as such.
Okay.
And that's where that's the point of the origin of the attack. Some of these units have, in Hordes and War Machine, it's called combined ranged attack, where every additional trooper or member of that unit adds to it. So there's slight special rules to encompass that side of things.
Okay.
The Black Diamond unit that I'm using has got that rule, which I had no idea what it did until a day or so ago. So I thought, okay. So they're not just a unit of grunts as such.
I suppose. The other thing I haven't asked. Does it use dice?
Nope, no dice at all. All cards.
Okay, so when you're shooting at something, it's flipping something off the Esper deck.
It's paying for the attack. with the Esper deck.
Right.
Paying for a press, because a lot of these attacks have it makes the attack better in some way, an added effect or an increased effect.
Okay.
And your opponent pays cards for trying to defend against that attack as well.
Okay.
But you have to have, unlike Malifaux, well, no, like Malifaux, you have to have the cards in your hand.
Right, okay.
To pay for it. And then the Held Esper that you have on units counts as two of any particular colour.
Right, and is that what the tokens are for? This nice token set is for?
No, the tokens are for all sorts of things. They're, in your Esper card, there is also a blank card with a list of numbers, because you get tokens numbered from 1 to 7.
Right, okay.
And they're for anything for AoEs, or they could be scenario-based. You also get three larger tokens.
Okay.
Which you've got.
I must admit, I haven't opened a token pack yet. So.
I think they're about 50 mil, I think.
Okay.
And they are your objectives. So two of them have got unfilled holes in the centre. One's got a filled hole. So that's the primary objective one. The other two are the secondary objectives.
Okay.
But it seems to have been well thought out. Which, considering they've had it for 2 years, I suppose. You'd kind of hope that. So you kind of hope that we've waited this long for a game and it better be good and have playability or replayability to it to allow us to actually be invested in the game. Otherwise, there's just going to be a load of figures on eBay and everyone will just be going, well, that was a waste of time and I won't be buying stuff off Kickstarter anymore because I learned my lesson.
Yeah. So Kickstarter, there's another separate thing we should talk about again. Okay, cool. Well, I think we've made up for yesterday's shorter episode.
Okay.
By having a more lengthy episode today. I'm actually talking to you about it has made me more excited. So, I really want to give it a go. So. Until next time, I've been Mike.
And I've been Conrad.
Bye bye.
Bye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're @fools_daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.